Hello everybody, and my apologies if my server, having been lying lifeless for the past few days, has left you short of short stories. It seems my internet host has suffered some sort of severe heat stroke. I shouldn't joke about this sort of thing. And so now, in my own heat-stroked delirium, I will turn this forum into a public service announcement. Please, in these days, make sure to drink lots of water, and make sure the elderly and the four-leggedly are all fed lots of water, and any other beast that you may keep who have more or fewer than four legs as well. And when the weather is questionable, you should only listen to stories like tonight's story in a room with plenty of circulation of the air, or else in front of the cool oscillation of a nice rotating fan. And that, my dears, is a PSA straight from the heart. So, good evening. It's Monday, the 17th of July, 2006, and it's Miette's Bedtime Story Podcast. Do Stay, Giraffe, by Wolfgang Borchert. He stood on the wind-howling, night-empty platform in the great, grey-suited, moon-lonely hall. Empty stations at night are the end of the world, extinct, grown meaningless, and void. Void, void, void. But if you go further, you are lost. Then you are lost. For the darkness has a terrible voice. You cannot escape it, and in a flash it has overwhelmed you. It assails you with memory of the murder you committed yesterday, and it attacks you with foreknowledge of the murder you'll commit tomorrow. And it presses up a cry in you, unheard fish cry of the solitary animal, overwhelmed by its own sea. And the cry tears up your face and makes hollow in its full of fear and past danger that terrify others. So silent is the dreadful darkness, cry of the solitary animal in its own sea. And it mounts like a flood and rushes on, dark-winged, threatening like breakers, and hisses wickedly like foam. He stood at the end of the world. The cold white arc lamps were merciless and made everything naked and doleful. But behind them grew a terrible darkness. No black was as black as the darkness round the white lamps of the night-empty platform. "I see you've got cigarettes," said the girl with two red mouths in the pale face. "Yes," he said, "I have some." "Why don't you come with me, then?" she whispered, close. "No," he said. "What for?" "You don't know what I'm like." She sniffed round about him. "I do," he answered. "Like them all." "You're a giraffe, big boy, a stubborn giraffe. Do you even know what I look like, eh?" "Hungry," he said, "naked and painted, like them all." "You're long and dumb, you giraffe," she giggled close. "But you look sweet, and you have cigarettes. Come on, boy, it's dark." Then he looked at her. "All right," he laughed. "You'll get the cigarettes and I kiss you. But if I take hold of your dress, what then?" "Then I'll blush," she said, and he thought her grin vulgar. A freight train yowled through the station and suddenly tore off, its miserly, shimmering tail light oozed away in embarrassment into the darkness. Banging, squeaking, crashing, rumbling, gone. Then he went with her. Then there were hands, faces and lips. But all the faces are bleeding, he thought, bleeding from the mouth, and the hands hold hand grenades. But then he tasted the makeup, and her hand grasped his bony arm. Then there was a groan, and a steel helmet fell, and an eye broke. "You're dying," he screamed. "Dying," she gloated, "that'd be something." Then she pushed the helmet back onto her forehead. Her dark hair shone softly. "Ah, your hair," he whispered. "Will you stay?" she asked softly. "Yes." "For long?" "Yes." "For always?" "Your hair smells like wet twigs," he said. "For always?" she asked again. And then from the distance, near, fat, great cry, fish cry, bats cry, dung beetles cry, the never-heard animal cry of the locomotive. Did the train sway on its tracks, full of fear from that cry? New, never-known yellow-green cry beneath faded constellations. Did that cry make the stars shiver? Then he tore open the window so that the night clutched with cold hands at his naked breast and said, "I must go." "Do stay, giraffe." Her mouth shimmered sick red in her pale face. But the giraffe stalked away across the pavement with hollow, echoing steps. And beneath him, the moon-grey street, falling silent again, returned to its petrified loneliness. The reptile-eyed windows looked dead, as though glazed with a milky film. The curtains, sleep-heavy, secretly breathing eyelids, billowed gently, dangled white, soft, and waved sorrowfully after him. The shutter meowed, and her breast was cold. When he looked round, behind the pane was a two red mouth. "Giraffe," it wept.